Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Austin, Texas. Welcome to the show, Dan French.
Victor, it's a pleasure to be on. I'm a big fan of the show and appreciate you having me.
Well, great to have you here. Now, Dan, you've been at this for a little while in a couple of different geographies, and for the last several years, you have been sitting on the sidelines waiting for market conditions to improve, and I'm excited to have this conversation because you're, in some sense, preaching to the choir as far as we're concerned, and yet you were bucking the trend as far as the rest of the market was concerned. But before we dive into the details, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I'll try to keep it somewhat brief, but I've been in real estate investing and operating for 20 years. And so I started with a small partnership myself and my still business partner of 20 years. I'm still going with him. His name is Pete Rex. And it's been a wonderful partnership. But it started off buying, you know, really small two-unit and four-unit buildings and just bootstrapping. We kind of came from like a working class background and wanted to get into real estate, build some future wealth and generate some returns for the small, you know, investors that we had. But of course, we made it through the great financial crisis together. It was difficult, very difficult from 08 onward. And we kind of really felt that pain because looking back at that time, we just made a lot of moves that we wouldn't do anymore, right? You know, you learn a lot of lessons. So that partnership, it survived all of that. And by 2011, I joined Pete full time. Back in the day, I was pursuing a different career. So I was kind of doing real estate, what I expected to be part time. It became full time. But then 2011 to 2019, joined Pete full time. The firm purchased $2 billion in total asset value. That was a very successful play that we made, really betting on Florida and Texas multifamily. So we bought about 17,000 apartment homes. So in broad strokes, that is the background. We sold $1.5 billion of the total asset value in 2019 because we saw there was a very frothy market. And then we've been patient ever since. And now we can get into that if you'd like, Victor. And we see a new buying opportunity now.
There's this word opportunistic that we often hear, which sometimes I equate to the word vulture. Oftentimes we see market conditions get a little bit overextended. And I hear very frequently people talking about, well, that's just the market. That's what I have to pay to play in the market. And I kind of have a different view that you should really not compromise your fundamentals and stay true to your underwriting, even if the market deviates from that. And it sounds like that's exactly what you've done.
Yeah, you know, we kind of have like a Buffett approach that we try to apply to real estate investments, right? And one of the greatest lines that he says is so true. It's be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. So that just means, you know, if you're going to have real alpha in real estate investment and or maybe any investment broadly speaking, I think you're going to have a bit of a contrarian stance, right? So if everyone's rushing into the same trade, you should really be careful. And that's what we saw in 2019. Everyone by that point had rushed in to the multifamily space in Florida and Texas, specifically value add. And it was so crowded. And so we just really took a strategic approach, shifted our mindset, and we got fearful because everyone else was being greedy.
In fact, in those days, I remember very distinctly saying, this doesn't make any sense when you can build for less than things are trading for in the open marketplace. And I mean, by a lot less. Number one, it makes sense to build instead of buying and doing those value add deals that you talked about, but it kind of defies the conventional wisdom. So good on you for, in some sense, sitting on the sidelines. Now, you probably missed some opportunities that maybe in retrospect you say, well, I probably could have done that one. But now that you fast forward to 2024, how does that feel?
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. We probably missed out on some opportunities, but we also value a good night's sleep, and we are stewarding other people's capital. So we have a huge fiduciary responsibility to ourselves, and more importantly, to anyone that invests alongside us. So it feels prudent, and I think if you're going to be a good investment, allocator and a fiduciary for folks, then you need to be prudent and can't always just be bold and boldly betting on the future. And so it feels like we mostly called it right. You know, we're not perfect, but I think we did call it mostly right. And now looking forward, I do think this is a wonderful time to be back on the acquisition side.
Now, you talked about both Texas and Florida, two very popular locations, but of course, also very diverse. What is the focus? Is it primary markets, secondary market, tertiary markets? How have you segmented the market?
Yeah, it's a good question, Victor. I mean, first of all, to put it into perspective, Texas, if it was its own economy, the GDP of Texas alone would be, I think, number seven in terms of the whole world, right?
Right.
So if you just peel that out, and I believe Florida is like 19 or somewhere in there, essentially the size of like Australia. So these are huge dynamic markets. The reason why we're betting and continue to bet on them is somewhat fairly obvious, probably, you know, to your audience, a very sophisticated audience. But, you know, just to recap it, no state income tax, very business friendly from a regulation standpoint. So we're seeing, I think we're going to continue to see the trends continue. Economic growth is going to be a virtuous cycle along with population growth. People want to live there. Quality of life is high. Cost of living relative to the high cost West and East Coast markets, like coastal markets. It's just night and day still. So yeah, we're betting on them. Specifically in Florida, it would be the big four. You know, that would be Orlando market, Tampa market, really all of South Florida, and then Jacksonville. Kind of stay away from the tertiary markets there within Florida. And then Texas, we love DFW, so the whole Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. See amazing buying opportunity there. And then Austin, you know, I think we have to be careful in all these markets because of new supply coming online. But those are the two hot markets that we love in Texas. Staying away from San Antonio and Houston unless it's super attractive. And if you'd like, Victor, I can go into that. But
well, yeah, I'm actually interested in that. So let's talk a little bit about first Austin. There's been a ton of new supply and a lot of that in the downtown core where, you know, rents are pushing north of $3.50 a square foot. But yet we're starting to see rents actually soften quite a bit because at least in the short term, that new supply is not absorbing as fast as people thought it would.
Yeah, no, that is true. I mean, there are pockets now within Austin that for sure are seeing negative rent growth. They're giving away massive concessions because there isn't a lot of new supply hitting at the same time. Really, the secret's been out on Austin, I would say. But with all that being said, it's such a dynamic economy and it continues to diversify, which is just fascinating to see. And I think the next 20 years in Austin is going to be as good as the last 20. I think people tend to think, well, maybe I missed the wave. Well, actually, maybe the waves is going to get bigger. If you look at Samsung, giant via the CHIPS Act has been helpful there, but giant.
That's up in Tyler.
Yeah, investment up in Tyler, right? That's going to add to a lot of other additional investment from people who need to be near Samsung, right? From a manufacturing standpoint, and a huge generator of economic productivity here. And then, of course, you have Tesla. You know, Tesla is a well-known story. They moved to Austin. They have a gigafactory here. But what people might not know is that when they announced, they said it would be 5 or 10,000 jobs. Now they're projecting 60,000 jobs. That came directly from Tesla spokesperson. So just huge. And again, same thing, sticky capital, I think is what they call that, or sticky investment, where all the suppliers now need to also move right next door to Tesla. So it's going to continue to be like, again, a virtuous cycle of companies that are going to continue to move here. And that's, we're only talking about manufacturing. Of course, there's technology underpinning a lot of the economy here. We have, I can go on and on, and maybe I'm going too far, but Dell, Apple. You know, Dell is, of course, the big dog that was raised here in Austin. But everyone, all the big players have the secondary offices here and pretty sizable ones. So it's just a wonderful, diverse economy.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, those market dynamics are completely different, where it's much more tech focused in the Northwest and much more manufacturing focused in the Southeast, down where Tesla is located. What are your thoughts along the I-35 corridor? You talked about avoiding San Antonio, but I actually think San Antonio is an up-and-comer. And the reason I say that is when you consider the nearshoring that we've seen over the last couple of years, a lot of new manufacturing being built, even by Chinese companies in northern Mexico, a lot of logistics needs to go through San Antonio because it's really the only major hub with good highway connectivity. And, you know, yeah, you could build stuff in Brownsville, but that's kind of off the beaten path. To me, San Antonio looks like the major logistics hub that is going to be up and coming, even more so than Houston and DFW.
No, it's a very smart stance to take. I mean, it's a secular bet that China will, you know, our manufacturing is going to continue to really onshore to the NATO countries, of course, Mexico being the massive beneficiary there, and then betting on San Antonio. It makes sense from a logistics standpoint. It's just a different market. It tends to be slow growth,
Yep.
so slow, more slow and steady. And then the talent pool there is a little bit different from an operations standpoint. In my experience there, you don't get as qualified operators, so it's a bit harder to maximize your property because the talent pool is just different.
Yeah, no question. No
Our people
question.
can do well there, but you know, it's not something, unless we see them opportunistically an amazing opportunity, then we don't target it, we don't focus it.
Now, we've seen, obviously, with the increase in interest rates, a fair amount of repricing. A lot of folks that have undertaken projects in the period of 2020 through 2022 in that overheated environment are probably sitting on the last extension of their bridge loans and don't have a path to a cash out refinance like they thought they would. And if anything, they're facing a cash in refinance. Are those the types of opportunities that you're pursuing? Are those opportunistic deals, or are you simply seeing opportunities that are, let's say, a little bit more natural, a little bit more organic type value add deals?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head and explained it well. There's groups that have bought at a very high basis, right? Let's say 2020 or 22. The basis was, it just got really, really topped up or frothy, whatever you want to call it. And then a lot of folks put floating debt on their deal. So now they're upside down. And to your point, they're out of options. They've kind of extended and pretended as long as they can. So then these deals are hitting the market. Earlier in the podcast, we talked about buying below replacement cost, and that gets to intrinsic value. And I think we're seeing pricing come down between 20 to 25% off of those highs. And that just feels really good. You're still buying durable cash flow. I think multifamily is very resilient as an asset class in these markets. And so a 20 to 25% correction in pricing, even though your interest rate's going to be higher coming in, just feels really good. And then, of course, we can get into interest rates. What's going to happen in 24, 25? What does the Fed do?
Love the investment thesis. It makes a lot of sense to me. It mirrors what we're thinking as well, although we are looking at a couple of the markets that you are currently avoiding. And if folks want to connect with you, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Yeah, I love giving out my cell phone and just would love to add value to anyone out there, even to trade ideas and thoughts about what people are seeing. So my cell phone number is 845 629-1808. Feel free to text me and we'll hop on a call. Our website is ATX, like Austin, Texas. So ATXacquisitions.com. Yeah, we'd love to connect with anyone out there who's loves real estate and looking at especially Florida and Texas, where we have a lot of expertise.
Awesome. Well, Dan, love what you're doing. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Dan French. His phone number will be in the show notes, and his website is atxacquisitions.com. The link will also be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.